A very good morning to you, listeners. We're a bit few minutes late, and we have some trouble in the north, especially somewhere in our town. Our power is off, and we are coming to you through the vented line. So, good morning, and so we've been a little bit actually try to sort out how to get to you. So, good morning and welcome. And as usual, it's a Monday morning. It's a Monday morning. It's the last week of the month. It's the last week of the month. It's just a few days before we come to the end of April. The year is really, 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 really actually running. All right. So welcome. And as usual, let's start as we normally start on this show. This is Unpacking the Day, this is your show where we, this is your show, this is your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business news, economic news, and politics. And every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear. And always, always curious, asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the story. So good morning. Our time is about 12 minutes past the hour of 8. And as we usually do, and also at this point, really, I want to pay tribute to our first speaker, Dr. Chitendero, who actually passed on from last week. So, yeah, these are people who are really paved the democracy of that we are, you know, enjoying today. They are the people who have really, you know, been the orchestrator of the democracy we have been enjoying for years. So, condolences to the family and to the country and to Namibia, because we have lost, you know, just a hero and also someone who have done so much for this country. So, yeah, may his soul rest in eternal peace, Dr. Chitendero. All right, so let's start with on this day, as we normally do on this day in Africa. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are tuning in from across this beautiful, beautiful continent and beyond. Welcome to On This Day in Africa, the segment where we turn back the pages of history and celebrate moments that shaped Africa's story. Now, today we're looking at April the 27th, a date that pops up, you know, again and again in African journey towards freedom and self-determination. So now there's one date. So let's start with South Africa. You know, if there is one day every South African knows by heart, it is April 27, 1994. For the very first time in the country's history, every single citizen, black, white, colored, Indian, walked into a polling station and cast their vote. No restriction, no segregation, just pure democracy. Now, this was not just an election day for South Africa. This was the moment of apartheid officially died, you know? So imagine the scene, queues stretching for miles, people who had waited their entire lives for this moment, grandmothers holding grandchildren, workers taking time off from work, young people voting for the first time. Millions of South Africans made their voice heard that day. So, and the result, Nelson Mandela became the country's first black president, a man who had spent 27 years in prison for fighting for this exact moment. No wonder it's on the 27th of April. So today, South Africans call April 27 Freedom Day. And honestly, it deserved that name. All right. Now, let's rewind the clock a bit further now to April 27, 1961. On this day, Sierra Leone say goodbye to British colonial rule and hello to independence. A man named Milton Margai, stepped up as the country's very first prime minister. So he led his people into a new era, one where Sierra Leoneans, the people who would govern actually themselves, come to that, you know, where now they start to govern themselves. And now here's the big picture. You know, Sierra Leone alone at that time wasn't alone. In the 1960s, all across Africa from colonial power. So it was like a feeling of liberation. So independence of that one. And finally, one year earlier, 1960, Togo completed its journey to full independence from France. You know, here's something interesting. Before this, Togo was what was called a UN trust territory. Basically, the United Nations was overseeing it while France administered it. But on this day, Togo became its own boss, if you like, okay, a fully sovereign nation. So another win for West Africa, another step forward for the continent freedom movement. So there you are. There you have it. Three major milestones all on the same calendar day. So that's what we have for you on this day. And our time is 18 minutes past the hour of 8. And let's look at our thought for the day today. So our thought for the day is that a man with a full belly thinks no one is hungry. A man with a full belly thinks no one is hungry. Now that means that you know, when your stomach is full, your cupboard is stocked, and your life is moving forward, you may stop actually noticing the people or the person who is eating. Stay aware of others. Everyone is where you are. Everyone has people who remember. Let us show kindness, share where we can, and never assume that because we are doing fine, everyone else is too. That's about for the day. That a man is hungry. All right. So, and So, all right. So, what we have coming up this morning, we're going to look at. There's an investigation. What we're looking at is the investigation into a suspected fraud scheme at the Central Medical Store, which actually the anti-corruption commission that's what we're going to look at. But we can choose the for that. Also, there is also one of the stories that making headlines as Namibia shift from oil exploration to full-scale development. The government is tasking, you know, the government is tasking international operators with the responsibility of building local capacity and integrating Namibia MSMEs into the petroleum value chain. So that's a story that's making headlines in the in today's edition of The Villager. And we're going to get into that if we still have time. Your participation will also be part of the show as usual. So let's unpack this together. So, all right, let's get in. Let's in. And let me just welcome you again. Good morning and welcome back. Welcome to Unpacking the Day, where we get into the heart of the story shaping our nation. This is where we get into the heart of story that's shaping our nation. And my name is Mike Oshoveli. So now I want you to picture this, okay? You're a mother in Katima Mulilo. Or you're a mother in Katima Mulilo, your child is sick, and you walk to the nearest clinic. There's no medicine. You are told to try the hospital, and you go there, and still no medicine. Then you are told to try a pharmacy. It's not bad luck. It's not bad planning, but maybe plainly theft. Yeah? What if it's because of theft that you have no medicine? That there's no medicine in the hospital, no medicine in the clinic. Now, that is the question we're looking at this morning. So a week ago, the Minister of Health and Social Service dropped a bombshell. Okay? It uncovered what it calls suspected irregularities at the central medical store. Now that's our main warehouse supplying every public hospitals and clinics in this country with medicines and medical supplies. So some staff, the ministry says, not me, I'm not saying this, the ministry says, may have manipulated stock records and diverted medicines. So in plain language, what that means is that they may have been stealing the very drug meant for you and your family, you know? So they might have been stealing. But here's where the story actually take a different twist. Now, the Anti-Corruption Commission, the very body that should be investing this, say he's still waiting. Now, waiting for what? So now it's waiting for the Ministry of Health actually to hand over the evidence and the names of the official involved, the people that are involved. So the ACC is up to now in the dark. So this is the watchdog. The watchdog is waiting at the gate. The watchdog is waiting at the gate and nobody is actually opening the door. The ministry is not open. Let's get into it a little bit. So let's get a background to it. Let's paint the bigger picture for you so that you understand. Now, medical stuff actually is not just any warehouse. It is the beat. This is the beat heart. If you like, this is the beat heart of Namibian pharmaceutical supply chain. Now, every public health facility, from Windhoek Central Hospital to Wallace Clinic in Zambezi region, depend on Central for its medicines. Okay? Now, for its medicine, for its supplies, its ability to treat patients, it depends on this. It depends on CMS. There's a so when the CMS stumbles, let's say, for example, if it stumbles, you know, the whole country feels the shock. You know, the whole country definitely would feel this. All right. Now, some financial years. If you follow the news, for the past two financial years, the service level at Central Medical Store has been below 57%. Their service level has been below 57%. And the ministry own target, the target of the ministry, is actually 80%. So, and we are not even close, we are not even close to the target of the ministry. So that means nearly half of the medicine, nearly half medicine that should be on the shelf are simply not there. We talk about 57%. So, meanwhile, if you look at the budget that they received in 2025 a year, so they saw the 1 billion. So that's nearly $2 billion Namibian dollar, nearly $2 billion allocated for pharmaceutical procurement, and that is 15% of the entire health budget of 12.2 billion. That was the budget. 15% of the entire health budget were actually budgeted for the pharmaceutical procurement. Billions. Here we're talking about billions that are being spent. Billion. And the shelves are still actually empty. Talking about billion has been spent, but we still have shelves that are actually empty. And now we may know why. Okay? I think one of the reasons why is that, and I always said, this is something that I always said, that numbers tell the story. Numbers always tell the story. So if you want to know the truth about something, the reality about something, follow the numbers. Okay? We talk about 1.8 billion for pharmaceutical, you know, in 2025-2026. And that's the amount of money. The service level below, it's below 57% at the Central Medical Store. And our target, the target of 80%, has been missed for two straight years. Now, if someone is siphoning medicine from that supply chain, the impact is not just about financial. It is also human. So definitely it's also human. And I think there's something that needs to be taken serious. And that's why I felt that is something that we need to discuss. It is about life. It's not just about, you know, financial. It's also human. We're talking about the lives of human being here. So now let's talk about the Anti-Corruption Commission. So the ACC Director General, Paulus Noah, has made a position crystal clear. So the ACC cannot act without evidence. That's what they said. It cannot suspend people without proof. It cannot open a criminal investigation without names. So, and right now, the Minister of Health has not provided either. They haven't provided those information. And well, that's, no one's reasoning is worth examining. So it's really worth examining. And he says you cannot actually just suspend someone. There must be evidence that reasonably implicates them, isn't it? Eh? There must be some reason, reasonable evidence that reasonably implicate these people, isn't it? But he also writes where he's saying if you act premature, and he warns about that, the suspension can backfire. It can backfire. He also is right about the law. I mean, definitely, you know, in terms of the due process matters. Nobody wants a situation where suspended officials are reinstated with the payout because the proper steps were not actually followed. Due process, it does matter. So, and actually there's a point there as well. So now, but here is the issue, okay? So here is the issue for me. Now, the ministry say it discovered this irregularity previously, the previous Friday. It's not the last Friday, the previous, you know, when we hear that it was actually the other Friday. Now, when you look at the time, it has now been days, okay, the whole of last week and where we are today. So the ACC is still actually waiting. How long does it take actually to compile names and evidence when you yourself have uncovered the scheme? It is the ministry that actually uncovered the scheme. And the other thing is also that this is not actually the ACC first encounter with the health ministry. Noah himself has confirmed that the ACC actually is investigating several cases of theft and fraud within the ministry. This is not the first encounter. So in June, if you remember, in June 2025, the health minister herself reported a case to the ACC asking the commission to investigate a suspected syndicate. So this is not one-off incident. This is a pattern. You can see that there is a pattern. So, and here is what should concern you. I think here is what something that should really, really concern you. Now, the ACC already has a backlog. They have already a backlog of 229 unresolved cases. So 229 unresolved cases. And that is not from the health sector alone, okay? This is not from the health sector, but it tells you something about the capacity of our anti-corruption watchdog. They just tell you that they don't have the capacity. Yeah? Now, if the ACC cannot get the evidence it need in a case that the ministry itself has flagged, so you can just what hope is there for the cases nobody actually is flagging? Do you understand what I mean? What hope, really? So I think those are some we're looking at. You also have to look at the capacity of the ACC itself. And we still actually have, you know, about 229 unresolved cases. What would make this actually more urgent compared to the others that are there already? And in the meantime, you know, the people are, you know, are let off. The people that are involved are let off. Or they can easily also now, you know, destroy the evidence, you know? So these are some issues that we have to think very seriously. Now, last week, the issue landed also in the parliament. It also landed in parliament. The NEF parliamentarian Longinus Ipumbu asked the question that many Namibians have been thinking. So, yeah, this is the question we probably have been thinking, you and I probably have been thinking, why are officials suspected of involving in the disappearance of medicine being reassigned instead of suspended? Because they were reassigned to other desks. Do you understand? They were not suspended. So Longinus asked, the NEF parliamentarian Ipumbu asked why the suspect were now reassigned instead of suspended. So why are they being shifted to a different desk instead of being removed from the system entirely? Which is actually a fair question, you know. And it deserves a straight answer. The ministry, the health minister, Dr. Esperanza Lubindao, responded by saying that the ministry is following a legal procedure. So suspicion, you know, because it's called suspicion, suspicion, she said, is not an automatic. So there are processes that must be followed. Now, the ministry is moving towards suspicion, but I mean, the ministry is moving to a suspension, but must first complete enough evidence, you know? So, as I said, she said suspension is not an automatic thing. So there are processes that must be followed. And they are moving towards that. Now, and let's unpack both sides, okay? Let's unpack both sides. On one hand, the minister is correct. I think he's correct. You cannot simply suspend people without following the Public Service Act, you know? So you have to follow the Public Service Act and the relevant labor laws. You have to do that. And if you do, then you risk the suspension being overturned on procedural grounds. You understand? If you just go ahead. Now, on the other hand, the reassignment of suspect raises a different problem. It raises a different problem. If someone is moved from one position to another within the same system, they still have access. They still have access. They still have influence. The risk of tampering with evidence or intimidating, for that matter, maybe intimidating witnesses, it does not disappear because someone has a new desk. That does not disappear. I think that's another way looking at that either you have something that reasonably something that you can suspend them, or you have nothing and you let it be. Now ask yourself, now my question is this, okay? Let's say, for example, you are a teller in the bank, okay? If a bank teller is suspected, okay? You are suspected of stealing money. Does the bank move them to a different counter? Does the bank have to move them to a different counter while it investigates? Or does it suspend them immediately? So that's what you normally do. Why should the public health system, okay? Why would the public health system be held? Now we're holding this to a lower standard. More like we're holding them to a lower standard than a commercial bank. Now just think about that. That someone actually just to be, you know, reassigned to a different desk. So that honestly raises a question. It raises some question. And one thing that also we maybe need to look at is that this has a human cost. Okay? I think it has a human, because this is not just, when you look at this, this is not just about bureaucratic and legal procedures. This is about people, real patients. You know, according to the article in the Windhoek Observer, a senior nurse in the Zambezi region, speaking anonymously, described a heartbreaking situation. Patient come to the clinic hoping for help, as she said. And the clinic doesn't have the medicine. The clinic doesn't have the medicine they need. And then they refer to